I'm Sharifah Amani.
I'm Syamin Osman.
And today on Lepak Seni, we have Din Sae! Yay!
Yes. Say hello. And because I'm a true kaki lepak.
Yes!
Second episode. Let's get into it, you know?
Okay, for me, we were talking about the guests, right? Yeah. We were talking about the guests who we want to ask and all that. I mean, I think all of us jump straight to Din. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Din has been one of these people that has always been there for us, the young people.
Younger generation.
Tak pernah look at ilmu. And like today also, like I called you, I just like legit had one text and he said, okay. And that's it. And alhamdulillah, we need more of the seniors to come and help us find a way. Because right now, I don't know lah. For me, at least, every way I try to cari the jalan also, I still get stuck or I still get lost. So thank you so much for joining.
It's very rare that we get like, you know, like the seniors working closely with the new generation.
Yeah.
But so this is Lepak Seni. So we're going to talk to Din.
Yeah.
We're going to ask him about his experiences, and through his kita sembang-sembang, we learn more lah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, you may learn nothing. Kan?
Yeah, or which we is also okay.
Also hopefully. We already lepak lah. So you get to see us lepak. So that also quite nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So we start with what we start with. Din Said, how did you start? And why film?
Through life, there are several points when you say, yeah, here I got interested, here I said, here, and then here I said, I want to be a filmmaker. Yeah.
Okay.
So for me, I think I started when I was a kid. I was in, I don't know then if I consciously said, oh, I'm going to be a filmmaker, but I was living in Cairo at the time. My best friend was this Egyptian kid, and his father apparently was a hot superstar. So
actor.
So for the school trip, the teacher, I think, spoke to him and asked his dad so we could go to the film studio. So I went to the film studio
in Cairo.
So I was like, posing gila, no? I was like maybe 8. That's one. And secondly, the second point when I really knew, I think, because, you know, I fell in love with literature way before that.
Yeah.
But I used to go to the school. This is when I started living in London.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to learn Latin.
Wow.
It's a different kind of school. You have to pass exam to get into the school. You have to have some IQ. But it's not expensive school. It's a normal school.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, so I must so. And then I found out I had to do Latin. So I'm just like, over time, I was thinking, who speaks this dead language?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying or not?
Right.
So I was maybe 10, 11, and I started going around London. There's all these bookshops,
but there's
near my school. And there's also one, what they call repertory cinema. Cinema that shows films, old films from Hollywood, old films from French films, and recent films.
Yeah.
But they show them all day.
Oh, right? Yeah.
So, afternoon, especially summer, like nak mengantuk macam gila, and then it's like, oh my god, do I really have to see about Aurelius Marcus Piggy Market, go to the market, and I have to translate into fucking Latin?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I just thought. Then one day I decided to go to this. There's a cinema called The Everyman.
Yeah.
So if you go around the back, right, and the pintu is this, the bar, that bar thing. So it's old.
Yeah.
So my hands were small, so I could slip my hand. And there's a bar, so you push the bar, and it will open. And inside, there's only about sometimes like 5, 6, 7 people. And a lot of them is old men.
Yeah.
Yeah. I go in there, and this time it was some French film.
Okay.
So I know the title, but I can't give it. Okay, it's like,
the
title was Claire's Knee, I think.
Okay.
Which is, I know it's a famous French director, but I thought Claire's knee. Body part. French, sexy. Yeah. So maybe the sex.
Yeah.
So I went to the back.
Yeah.
I went in, but they always have double billing, triple billing. So it's like, so there's only one, but I missed that already, punya.
Right.
And then there was other film that was playing, and I was like, I saw this film. I was like, I'm ngamuk, and I was so angry, man, after I left the cinema, because I could not understand what the this film was. Yeah. And of course, it was Jean-Luc Godard.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so like all the elliptical cuts and jump cuts. Yeah, yeah. What kind of story is this, man? So I decided after that I was going to buy books on film. Mm. So I saved my pocket money.
At 10 years old?
Yeah, I was 10, 11.
So from that experience, you decided, okay, I'm going to start reading.
So I started going to the bookshop and I said, because my mother already taught me to love books.
Yeah.
So it was easy for me. Like, and books are cheap in London. Yeah. It's like 10 pence.
Yeah.
So I started buying and I started reading Jean-Luc Godard. So I started reading.
Okay. Yeah.
Some parts I don't understand, some parts I understand. So okay, lah. And then I just started reading more and more. Mm. And that's when I kind of got into it. But I really think I more or less knew not long after that, because I started going every day to this, every Latin lesson. Double Latin, sayang. Bukan single. Double Latin means it's 2 hours. Right?
So,
So I go, and more and more, I started seeing more and more films. Mm-hmm. Russian films, you know, French films. And so that's when I started really, really falling in love with it. At the same time, they always say, kan, a lot of things happen by luck, and you're always sometimes at the right place, you know, the right time.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what it was, even though at the time I was very interested in literature, I was in love with painting and literature and poetry. But it seemed that I had found a medium that, even though, I mean, when you're young, and I always felt that, oh, it's so far, however am I going to be that?
Was there any point you were like, maybe I shouldn't do this for me, or was it like a consistent, like...
As you get older, you kind of get scared or you get this feeling, I remember literature. I used to write secretly.
Okay. So,
and I used to write to my friends.
Yeah.
Right? Write to my friends as if I'm just writing a letter. So it's not like I'm... But actually, in real life, I'm actually practicing how to write. Yeah.
Do you remember the first story you wrote?
Yeah.
Do you remember it?
Yeah. Not to myself, but it was in school.
Okay.
I just had an English teacher. He just came down from Cambridge. He was an amazing man. He just walked into the room and he just sat down. So we expect he's a new teacher, kan? Tunggulah. And he just sat there and looked at us. And then ring, and then he left. And then everyone, he did nothing. And then everyone went, what the fuck? It's a combination of both, but and then he came into the class the next class and the next day, and he just said, okay, seeing that you didn't really get it, so get what you didn't tell us nothing. He's like, okay, I want you to do this. I said, you know, whatever you want to do, you can do it here. We're going to sit in a circle, so everyone sit, forget your desk, we sit in a circle, and I just want to talk. So we just talk. And then end of that lesson says, next lesson, I want you to bring your favorite music. I want to bring your favorite poem. So people bring Led Zeppelin, Bob Dylan.
I want
you to bring your favorite, you know, books, cartoons, whatever, and we will discuss this. And to me, this, to all of us, who the f*** is this guy?
Yeah, exactly, yes.
But, you know,
was at 10 years old as well?
Yeah, that was 11. Yeah, 10, 11.
Such a young age.
Such a young age,
So what happened was, you know, Nani, what happened was, I remember, he said, okay, first homework, write an essay on a moment or something in your childhood.
Right.
So I wrote about my time. I remember very well. I was growing up as a gambut in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. And I wrote that. You know, it's just a little details, like apparently later he told me that.
Okay.
You know, how my small hands pushed the gate and stuff like that. And I didn't even know I could write. You know, so it's like, he really loved it. And then he just said to the class, I want you all to read this essay. Now, this is important to me. You know why? Because I went to an all-boys school. And in that time in England, there was a lot of racism. Because I was foreign.
Mm-hmm.
And the Idi Amin Uganda had just asked the Indians to go home and kick them out. So they all ended up in England.
Mm.
So there's a lot of backlash against blacks, against Pakis and whatever. And even when I was in school, I was all boys school. I walked down the corridor, boys, bullies.
Good.
I was like, oi, chink! And I went like that.
Get it right!
They never get it right!
But that's the thing. So I turned around and said, and then he looks at me and he goes, Paki, so going back to that, sorry. So for me, that was a huge impact, because every time he walked into class, he didn't even look at the class. He just walks in, Syed, read your essay. Right, he just, as he's walking to the stairwell, Syed, read your essay. And you know, I was the only, me and there was Bangladesh, Indian
non-white
kid.
Non-white lah, huh?
I was the only two non-whites.
Two non-whites.
And he picked me up to read. And I've been too reticent, a bit too like, I'm not ready or something.
To get in touch with him.
Because he did a lot for me. He did a lot for my confidence.
Sure.
And
yeah.
And it's funny enough, so when we researched, he said, oh, Dane, he's the so-and-so of the T.S. Eliot Society. So it was just, you know, my favorite poet also.
Yeah.
So it was really wonderful. So maybe I will write to him one day. I should do it before it's too late.
I
actually.
Mean,
yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, that's how it was. And
do you remember what the story was about?
Yeah, it was about how I was growing up in Segambut and how I used to play football. Yeah, and then,
so just
that bit and how I came home one day. And I can't remember exactly the entire thing, but I just wrote this thing. Yeah.
Okay, for people who are not too familiar, it's like Dane speaks about Segambut and then he's in London and stuff. Shall we clear it up for people who don't know? Okay,
yeah.
So you were born in?
I was born in Malaysia.
You were born in Malaysia?
I was born in... Nandita cursed me. She cursed me because there was this myth, right?
Okay.
I grew up, I was born in Kelantan. No, I was born... You mean you're born in Bangsa?
You were born in
Bangsa Hospital. Yeah,
you were born in Bangsa? Yay!
Bangsa,
buddy.
No, but...
Eh, ni pun kata orang Kelantan penuh hair sekarang.
No.
But that was going around that you were originally from Kelantan.
I am, in many ways. Because I lived here maybe 6 months.
Okay.
And then I was, and then after that, I lived most of my life in Kelantan.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
Tumpat. And then in Tumpat.
Grew up in
Tumpat. Yeah.
Okay.
And then I stayed 1 year. Oh, maybe that was like until I was about 5, 6.
Mm-hmm.
Then I stayed 1 year in KL, in Kampung Baru, because my mom's Minang. My mom's from Kampung Baru. So I stayed in Kampung Baru, and then for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then my parents had left already. We lived in Egypt.
Okay.
My parents had left. My father was working there.
All right.
So, you know, for the first time, they can't. So it's like my auntie or something put me on a plane with my sister. Because we were still at, so we were the two.
Okay.
My two younger sisters, dah boleh pergi. But we were still at school, so lessons had to finish.
Yeah.
Right? So we finished the lessons, so at a certain month, then they put us on a plane, and we flew off with the two youngest passengers there. And it was like, I've never been on a plane. I didn't know my parents are not there.
Yeah.
So I guess in a way, that's one of the great, wonderful training. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You put on a plane, just go. And then you don't know where the hell you're going. And then by the time
so
you get there.
You weren't like, you know, they give you the young passengers.
No, there's nothing. They just put there. I mean, of course, of course, the air hostess will be kind.
They
will be kind to us. But we didn't know a thing.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah. So it was really.
Egypt? You stayed there for how long before London?
Egypt is 3 years.
3 years.
Yeah.
And then London.
In London.
So most of your life, where's home?
No, I didn't have a home.
You didn't have a home.
You know?
Where's home for you now?
No, because for a long time that was a huge question.
Okay.
Like, what is home?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Where is home?
Exactly.
How old were you when you came back to Malaysia?
No, I was already I was like early 30s.
Okay.
I was 31, 30. But the point what I'm saying is, as you grow up, I never understood when people say, oh, I miss home. Or
okay.
I got to go back to this weekend. I miss my mom.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means. No, seriously, I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Because we've never had that kind of thing.
Yeah. So that's why you shifted. So it was majority Egypt and London? Is it safe to say?
Yeah. But majority London.
London. Okay. The reason I asked about home is because I think it's a running theme a bit because I mean yesterday we spoke about it as well about the sense of belonging.
This is nice.
Belonging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sense of belonging.
Belonging, but also I think it's important for creativity.
Yes.
So
let's talk about that because
I think Nani and I always talk about. I mean, a lot of our friends, you know, they want to go to Hollywood, they want to go to, like, UK and, like, you know, Especially me, like, in the stand-up comedy scene, a lot of them want to go. Mm. But I was telling Nani, like, I can't see myself creating art outside of Malaysia.
Mm.
I feel like a lot of the stories that I want to tell is very much connected to me being here. Mm. So it's just something I just realized, like, a few years back. Yeah.
That sense of belonging. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you saw Gold Rain, right? The theatre I did. And that's a running theme again. And we've had this conversation di mana saya selalu rasa saya macam tak cukup. Yeah. Saya tak cukup Islam, saya tak cukup Melayu, saya tak cukup apa. Pasal saya rasa saya cukup. Tapi orang lain selalu beritahu saya tak cukup. So, you know, like, I totally understand, you know, in a way. I didn't go through what you went through, no, in no shape or form. But that sense of belonging, you know, do we...
Yeah.
Is that something to strive for, even?
I don't know. Yeah, this huh. I don't know whether it's something to strive for, but it's certainly a problematic if you don't have it.
Okay.
And I realized from very young. It's funny. Huh? I don't know why it came from. Because I think again, yeah, like I said, I keep saying I love, my first love was literature, and I fell in love with what I call the Holy Trinity, which is Eliot, Joyce, and Beckett. And for me, no. But seriously, because I realized one thing they all had in common: a rejection of home.
Mm.
Eliot came to England.
Okay, continue.
Eliot came to England. Joyce, I think at one point he moved to Paris, like Beckett, right? And they all had the same problematic relationship with home. And one day, I don't in my own way, like, my interpretation of that. One day, I just said to myself, I think I was in my teens, you know, my mid to late teens, maybe I was 16, 17, and I thought to myself, if I wanted to do something, if I wanted to create and tell a story, what am I going to say?
Exactly.
I don't have a home. Right? Because things come from home.
Yeah. You write what you know and all that.
So that's why I think, right now, I mean, I know because I managed to tap into however short that moment was at home. Because even though that moment, I believe that between 5 to 6 is your most formative years.
Mm.
It's not when you become 9, 10, 11. It's five to six.
6 years old.
I'll tell you why in a minute. But the point is, I felt that, that's why I felt like Beckett or Joyce, even though they rejected or trying to reject whatever.
Yeah.
They had something to reject. I had nothing.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, it troubled me a lot over the years. But then I even thought maybe that was a state of the condition that is then becomes what you write about.
Yeah.
The state of exile.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So the exilic condition becomes something really important.
Yeah.
And no less so for a creative person or for what you want to create, because that becomes perhaps an area or a piece of land that you can really mine and dig deep. But you can't dig deep because at the end of the day, what comes with home is emotion.
Mm-hmm.
What comes with home is memories. What comes with home are things grounded in the tangible things that we grew up in and that we can touch. If you belong nowhere, what exactly is, that's not even sand. I can't even have sand to pegang. But you know, I can go back to the gumboot and where I fell, and I know I had to sum up because I fell on dog shit and whatever. And that's another story, you know, that's how my father was just an amazing man. So anyway, that's another story. So my point is, how?
Exactly.
Right? How? So I think the 5 years, and this is very important, and that's when I realized actually we are formed. Within the five to six to seven years, we are already formed. It's all in there. And so a lot, it's amazing, huh? A lot of things now when I tap into it, I realize it was 5 years, but it's like almost as if 500 years were packed into that.
Mm.
And I think people ask me, then why did you come home? You're always so broad. Because my simple answer is, I want to make films, I don't make stories, I thought about it, but I have nothing to say to the English. But I have a lot to say, and I know because I grew up in Tumpat,
Yeah.
I grew up, there was this mad woman screaming across. She lives in the marketplace.
Mm.
My father, who was, you know, he was scouring the border and catching smugglers. He would come home at 3 o'clock in the morning. And then at 4, when he's about to sleep, she starts screaming.
Mm.
And my father would just, shut up! She's speaking Cantonese. My father is going,
shut up!
My father is from Besut. Why you say shut up? My father would just say, my father would just say, shut up! That's across the road, right? So it's like, and then this is so palpable. This is what makes up your memory. The kind of things of course I played, I catch, you know, there's a padang next door, if it's flooded, you catch fighting fish.
Mm.
All these things
yeah.
become part of your memory, and I think that's what makes it home.
Mm.
You know, it's to say, a space is a space, but it's memories and stories that make it place.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah.
Okay.
What about you, Nani?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Home.
Home?
Yeah.
Home. I don't know. What you just said was very interesting, and it's comforting as well. Home is very much my family. Home is very much my memories as well.
Yeah.
I think I relate to what you just said.
But you have, I think, I see, I don't know you very well, your family, but...
Not at all!
No, but I can see a very tight-knit family.
Very much,
yeah.
Very much. I mean, yeah,
I
so
that's home.
That's my home. Yeah, that's my home. This is my home as well. My friends, the people that I love, is everybody. So that's it.
Home.
Home for you.
It's quite a loaded question, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, didn't you see how he reacted?
I know. It's actually like, for the longest time, I didn't want to be here.
You studied that.
Because I studied in Australia. I didn't want to come back, but my parents were like, no, come back. So I begrudgingly came back. But it took me quite some time to sort of like, be okay with you know, calling Malaysia my home and being okay with it. But... you know, with you know, anything that you love, you also have, you know, you hate it, right? So there are, you know, it's every day it's like you're juggling with these things. You love it, but you hate it as well.
But what was the struggle?
Mm-hmm.
I think I always felt like an outsider.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Because
of like my ideas, I feel because of my belief system.
Mm.
I didn't have like a very conventional upbringing with my parents because, you know, interracial marriage.
Yeah.
So it was very like chillax, you know, like super chillax. And then you go into like sekolah kebangsaan and then you hear things, you know, like I was, for the longest time, I was so scared or shy to tell people that I was half Malay, half Indian.
Because
I would hear things that my Malay friends would say about Indian people, you know?
Yeah.
So there was that shame and guilt. So I think like those memories made me macam quite susah lah, you know, to see Malaysia as home. Only recently, I feel.
Yeah, I feel there's a struggle sometimes because I try and say, I belong. I'm trying to convince everybody. You know, I am, you know. But yeah, sometimes you just...
But do you accept it now?
Oh, yes, very much.
That,
I think...
That you don't belong? Or that you sit somewhere in between?
I belong...
I feel like... No, this
how
is so many. There's a space for us.
There's a space for us.
Yeah.
We don't have to feel guilty anymore.
Yeah,
I speak English.
Yes,
I speak English. I grew up in Bangsa. I didn't ask for it. Allah bless me with this, but I'm not going to forsake it. You know?
How long? When did that happen?
30,
can I ask?
I mean, I think after being in the industry for a while and, you know, not understanding why people, you know, like some people like hated Yasmin and her film so much and I was part of that thing as well, you know. I just didn't understand this extreme backlash that she got. She was just telling stories and suddenly she's pencemar budaya, suddenly she's...
Really?
Did,
I never knew that. So
When Sepet won, the next day they had a forum, Patutkah Sepet Menang. They couldn't give us time to just like to enjoy the moment, but it's fine. But you know, and the thing is that when you're talking about pencemar budaya, and so what budaya, right?
Mm.
What budaya and what is she mencemaring?
Yeah.
Segue into identity.
Identity, yeah.
Okay, because semalam also we put this question, you know, does Malaysian films, do we have an identity? Do we have an identity? And I, Charmaine and I couldn't answer it very well.
We struggled,
right? We struggled with that. And then I think that's something that Malaysians deal, you know, have, you know, with identity.
Mm.
The theme, macam semalam pun kita borak, selalu kita tanya, like, do any of us ever feel like we belong?
Yeah.
Yeah, so in film, what say you? Do we have a Malaysian identity?
Okay, I should put this. There was a very conscious, I don't think there was a conscious act. Well, maybe there was, by filmmakers at some point in post-coloniality,
yeah.
In post-colonial Malaysia, sometimes 60s, 70s, 70s particularly, right, probably into the 80s. And that was as a result of coloniality,
yeah.
And that happened everywhere in the world.
Yeah.
Okay, African cinema, Middle Eastern cinema,
mm.
Particularly South American cinema, and of course Asian cinema. But the thing is, for me, in Malaysia in particular,
okay.
It exists. First, let me answer. It does exist.
So
the idea of identity in cinema, as much as it does in painting, as much as it does in literature. But in cinema, I feel that right now, we have, and the reasons are manifold, but we have, it's too late. It's too late.
Untuk?
The question of identity in cinema, it's too late because...
Untuk kita or everybody?
Maybe for everybody, I'm not interested, but for us in particular.
Okay, right.
And I've said this to that critic. I just said, it's still valid, but per se for us to say and want to discuss what is and want to discuss identity cinema, it cannot be framed within that argument anymore.
Mm.
Whilst the idea and the notion of the idea of identity within cinema, even if only as political agenda, can exist.
Right.
It isn't the main thrust anymore simply because you have the internet.
Mm.
You have everything. You can ask today's kids,
does
it really matter what bloody identity you are?
Mm. When, but everybody's fighting about it in politics, about identity, this
in
identity.
For sure.
Doesn't it seep?
It does. That's why I said to you, so that's when I said it's not invalid.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
But it's no longer, I don't think it any longer takes a central theme.
In that sense, do, in your opinion,
do
we make enough Malaysian films with a Malaysian identity?
Do we tell enough Malaysian stories?
Okay, I think that's an important question. But you know what? I don't give a f***. I don't care.
Okay. So,
I don't care.
So should we? Like, individually, you don't care, but should other people care?
Why not? If that's what is
important to the individual.
But don't make no mistake. I mean, I can say I do a horror film. My next horror film, let's say, is set in one apartment block or whatever, but it's about sexuality and so on and so forth. In the past, Interchange was set in some non-descript city. And before that. But the point is, it doesn't mean it's not about identity. It doesn't mean, in one way or another, it doesn't inform the film, inform ideas that we can say narrates the film outside of the film itself.
Right.
Yeah. It's valid, but I just don't think...
I don't care.
Yeah.
It's fine.
It's like, tomorrow, actually, Nani,
there
is nothing to stop anyone, not just here at this table, to actually say, tomorrow I'm moving and I'm living somewhere else.
Mm, of course.
Yeah.
Because we already know it.
Yeah.
If we don't know it because we don't know it, we've already known it through film. Right? Yeah.
Next question. Ooh, shall we ask this one?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you think we have a film industry? Can we call it an industry?
We do. It's a broken one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think it functions as an industry?
No.
First of all.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Tak kan? System pun tak ada.
No,
basics, we don't have it. Mm. Right? Yeah. So is it fair to call it an industry in the first place?
But you can call it an industry because in many ways... There is an industry in the sense that there's a car industry. There's a
in that sense lah.
Yeah, there's a film industry, I don't know. There's food industry. There's whatever.
Yeah.
It may be broken. It may be bad. But it is, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
You know, it is an industry because there is a community of people who work within in that milieu and in that same kind of area, right?
Yeah. When you came back from London, you said you were in your early 30s, right?
Hmm.
Did you go straight into advertising or...?
I worked in TV.
TV?
I did that. Did you ever see that thing? I worked with Linda Chong.
Okay.
Was, with Jalan Ketawa.
Jalan Ketawa.
Yeah, so we formed two teams. Harith was with another team. Me and Linda was another. And we did, and occasionally I'd step in, but you know, I'm not really an actor, so I don't really, I'm more behind
the production. No, that's not what I heard. Recently, nowadays, you're trying to curi makan actor, are you?
All directors now,
yeah.
Oh, my dad pun dah belakang. Yeah. Wow, is it really now? Yeah. The next one.
Hello, people, all we all tak boleh cari makan. Yeah, so if people tak tahu, Dan was in Mrs. K, he was in, Terbaik dan Langit.
Yeah.
Dan loves to do that. Can say the new one lah. Cannot say the new one. Can say the new one. He jadi orang jahat besar tau. Dia paling jahat-jahat orang. Dalam filem Adrian kan?
Yeah.
Filem Adrian.
Right.
The next
Wira.
One. What's it called? Wira. So the movie is called Wira. So the director of Pascal.
Pascal.
Yeah. So this is the movie. Ha! Right. Dan berlakon cerita blockbuster ada? Ha! Kita pun tak ada.
Okay, so you came back, you did TV dan Ketawa.
Yeah, I worked too.
What was it like then? It's very different kan? I mean, like for me, like seeing my dad, like, you know, do his Be My Tang Too for so many years.
Yeah.
It just felt like it was a different time. It felt like we were headed somewhere, you know?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yes. Seeing all the actors who did Be My, like, you know, they come to rehearsals for 2 weeks. And then in 2 weeks, they film 3 episodes and then they get paid. And it was just constant, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's why I wanted to do this. Because I'm, things are looking good, you know? Yeah. But so when you came back, you did TV and then you went into advertising?
Yeah, only because I got depressed and I got disillusioned by TV. Because there was one program that Linda proposed. Jalan Ketawa was hugely successful on the back of... Most of the time, it was Harith and Linda. I was just supporting to Linda. But then she said, then can we do this? What would you like to do program? So I wanted to do something like, I proposed like a Saturday Night Live or like a variety show. Yeah, like variety show. So we had music, we had sketches. Because we were then working, and this, you're right. You're right, because we did it, and you're right, it was a very different time.
Very different, I mean...
Because the whole of the Jalan Ketawa team, if you know, there was Rambo Chin, there was Moon, and then you had the others, okay?
Yeah.
You had Rama, the Indian guy. And so we devised, I'll give an example, so very quickly, I devised this show, and interspersed with music videos.
Oh, cool.
And music, okay? And we had... Rambo Chin, belajarlah bahasa Melayu dengan Rambo Chin. You can't speak Malay to save his life. There's Rambo Chin trying to teach people how to speak Malay. And then there was D. D is Agony Aunt. So we had D. And D would have a letter. At the time, Diana and Charles was going through a massive... Not even the divorce yet. They were going through...
Scandal.
So D would get a letter from Diana.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and D would read, you know, and then D would give advice. And then there was one show that was really lovely. It was Moon. You know, Moon speaks... Mandarin, Hokkien, and speaks Malay. Right?
Yeah.
So she was like, she stood this, and there was a cooking thing, and she's like, table.
Yeah.
And the table was like this, like, so you can see through.
Uh-huh.
And she was like, pakai kain, and then she's doing, hari ni, perempuan-perempuan, kamu nak buat hari ni, nak ajar macam mana nak masak, nasi ayam kangkang.
Nasi kangkang.
So,
yeah.
So we have to say nasi ayam kangkang lah.
Yeah,
so,
boleh lepas?
Yeah.
Lepas.
Everything was lepas. There was no problem. That's my point.
Dude, Sam, man. Sam. Character Sam was like on primetime TV.
Yeah.
Different times, you know.
It's very different. And it's only in the 90s, man. It's like 90, early 90s.
Jauh, kan?
But not that far. But then, so there was like, we had one time, we had a travel show, and can't remember who was helming the travel show. This is all sketches.
Yeah.
And one of the travel show is like, mari kita pergi Taman Malu ya. Taman Malu ya ialah tempat orang Melayu tapi semua malu. So, Melayu sangat-sangat Melayu. Malu dia tak keluar. They never leave the house. They don't go out. Okay. So we go on this tour lah.
Yeah,
we chose some place lah kan. And then it's like, and when people come out, they run. They run from one place to another and hide behind a tree.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of shit. And then there was like, another kampung where people only pay bills when it's bawang meja. You pay your bills, right? So there's this man going around, and the man, I mean the electricity bill man. Everyone carries a portable table, so everything's conducted under a table.
Brilliant.
And then open the table and they all go underneath and start talking. So it's like all these things we had, you know. So
what was the process like? I think sometimes we discussed like the process, right? Most of the time we're not given the luxury of time. But back then, was there like, was the station like very generous in terms of like your lead time, your writing?
No, you know what it was? Because Linda was so successful with Jalan Ketawa and Harith, and they basically, a lot of things happen on ad hoc, on set.
Right, so this
is devised. Harith is very good in that way. So then they trusted her. And because it was A1 category, her programs.
Right?
And so therefore, when she proposed this other program, it was not so difficult.
Yeah.
And so I never had to go through any other process. She dealt with it. And I never had to. I just did the writing and did the device, the whole thing. And we just went ahead and shot it, you know. So it was, we did it. We wanted to call it Bomba. And they said, well, why Bomba?
Bomba?
Because it was incendiary. It was incendiary, so it was on fire, so we needed the Bomba to put it out. Because we were going to go, we were going to go all the way. Actually, it's called Pejabat Bomba International. So that's why I wanted to make it like that. But I think at one point, there was a new management, there was a new change, and then they re-edited and then decided to reshoot some things, and I just felt like, time to move on. It's just rubbish.
Do you ever had a time in your, I mean, you know, after doing TV, after doing commercials, and then, you know, and Bunuhan, like, come on, it's like my ultimate favorite film. I saw it 7 times. I'm a loser. Fine.
Thank you.
Japan, it's like the only time I really understood it is when we were in Japan and you were having the Q&A, and I'm like, okay, I get it. You know, and then we've got Dukun, right? After so many years, and it's like, oh my god, finally, god damn it, finally we get to see it. And then you've got Interchange, right? So all that, all the films, I know, because I've got friends on set, and I know how they love you. You're an actor, director. You're an actor's dream, actor, director. You know. I was just wondering, because you know, I've got dari dulu, say Bob or Mirul or whoever, Abang Faizal even. You know, they sing praises to be on a Din Syed set as an actor. It's such a blessing. You know, it's like really because you get to create. You're not just a bloody prop. Right?
Of course, like.
So what is it? Because that's rare.
What's your favorite thing?
What's your favorite thing about actors?
You know, when I was doing commercials and I was in TV, then I joined commercials. You know, I of course now can look back and it's perhaps unfair. But everyone, I used to remember, you know, we were in commercials. Yeah. A lot of people, they come from different backgrounds and they all think that, you know, they hate Malay dramas, they hate dramas, they think it's shit. They think what we do and they think actors are shit.
Yes!
Yeah. But you know what? You know what? When I first did Dukun, I was blown away.
Umi,
everyone. Everyone. Because we also casted. And then after that, Bunuhan, I was like, and I look back, and I'll tell you in the story after this, but I look back and I tell you, I'm blown away. If whatever you said, do we have industry? No. Do we have? Yeah. And is it broken?
Yeah.
It is and all that. But there are we lack. Mm-hmm. But there's one area we do not lack. Is the acting fraternity. Mm. Our actors. No. I'm not just saying. Our actors in this country are phenomenal.
I think so.
The talent is phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean it from the bottom of my heart.
Yeah,
I didn't know until... Of course, I started working with them. I just said, my God. And I learned a lot from it.
Yeah.
And so let me tell you, I mean, there was, for example, an Interchange, okay? Because it happened already in Bunuhan, it happened already in Dukun.
Yeah. Yeah.
In Interchange, we were working in the Japanese sound design, sound houses. Yeah. So I like to keep live recording. Because even when they act, and of course our actors are very good, they can replicate like that, you know?
Yeah.
It's body memory.
Yeah.
And I do about maybe 10... 10-12% only of dubbing because sound lah,
itik
duit lah, motorbike so I have to do that and I hate doing it because you know what, even though it's perfect the way they do it, you know, you can feel it, the energy is not the same. So that's what I love about live recording because you feel the energy. So it's really funny. So the Japanese sound house guys, he goes, Mr. Dan, we booked for you 3 days for Ume, for Sam, 3 days for Ideal, and for the girl, maybe 3.5 days. Me and Nan, we just sat there. No. So Hiro, so I was saying that, then let me explain. So it's like, Hiro, don't need. So this one, half a day. This one, half a day. This one, a few hours. This one, are you sure? So, yes, I'm very sure. Trust me, I'm very sure.
Yeah.
So when the time came, we did it. He was like, even in Japan, we don't do this. This doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And I said, you know why? I explained to him, it's the body memory. It's not just the memory, it's the body. And then I realized that means our actors are so good. They get into their role. It becomes part of them and they can just replicate it like that, you know.
Yeah.
This time though I did more because in Bunohan and Dukun it was perfect, man. That's when I discovered who the f*** are these people, man. So that's when I thought to myself there was no need to because the dubbing. I did because I wanted maybe a different mood or different options to change certain things, but actually in the end I never really needed to use it, you know. So it was great and that's one huge lesson and something that I to this day I stand by the acting fraternity in this country as one of the best in the world, one of the top really. And it's funny, you know, it's all intuitive or
it's very intuitive.
It's intuitive and it's a process that they have. Everyone's different.
But the thing is then again I nak cakap like they are great actors, right? But given the space they become magnanimous. MashaAllah, as an audience member watching my friends that I've known for so long in that position and being guided by a storyteller that knows what he wants to say and knows exactly how to use this men, these women. MashaAllah. And you know, they go out now and what they're doing.
Yeah.
Right?
But you know, Nani,
they don't get enough of this
that.
Work.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
We want to work, then. We want to work, but we don't get enough of those work. And it's tough because, you know, after a while, you know, there's a lot of things, you know, that people tell the same stories. You're not famous enough. You don't go in, you know, like Miro. Miro's always stuck in this thing where he's like, you're not handsome enough. You're not this enough. You're not that enough. It's like, do you understand how brilliant this person is? Do you know he's a chameleon? Do you know that he can be anything you want him to be?
I know.
And so, make more films. Make more films and take all these brilliant people.
You know, actually make series.
Yeah,
then you have a lot more people come on board,
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, hearing from them and hearing from you. So, it's such a wonderful process that you guys go through. Just off the bat, out of all three, which was your most fulfilling?
Fulfilling
process.
Mm.
Bunohan, Dukun, dengan Interchange. From birth of idea to everything, yang you rasa, okay, I tak rasa nak bunuh diri, this film, something.
Okay, let me just first of all say that they all had that for me, but in different ways. But for me, Bunohan, because that's the one I spent. It's funny, it's the one I spent more time on. It's the one I had most time on. And I realized one thing, because we write with different people, but I realized that it matters a lot when you write. And with Bunohan, it started from the very beginning. I write with Nan, I write the idea first, and then Nan's always there. But when you, I remember I went off 1.5 months, 2 months, my sister lives in Satu, on the coast of Terengganu. And she has a lovely house there, so I just go there. And it's really lovely. The process was, I start in the morning, and about 3 to 4, the fishermen come by the beach.
Yeah.
I go there, I buy the fish, come home, and cook for the family. Because it's my time out.
Yeah.
I cook for the family.
Yeah.
I start again after dinner, about 7:38.
Mm-hmm.
And then I work until 2, 3. And I get up again about 9, 10.
Yeah.
So that was possible. And I think the important thing is that when you begin to write and write your own, it's far stronger that you feel that you own it.
Mm.
It's important to own it. But the problem with writing on your own also is the problem that it isn't. Is that it's so easy for you to not be able to let go. So therefore criticisms are difficult to handle.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm very grateful and very fortunate and lucky that I have written before this with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that process, even if I say so myself, I'm not that egotistical about things because I sometimes just need to stand back or whatever, because I realize that so long, and it's not easy, so long as you fight, I've written with Al Jafri, I've written with PTO, and my experience with PTO has really been also wonderful. To be able to say, whatever you fight about, it's about this. It's not about you.
Yep.
If it's about this, and it serves this, which is a hard call to make.
Yeah.
It's easier said than done.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's what I mean by the problem with ideas. One is you tend to own it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Once you own it, it's very difficult to let go.
Yeah.
But you have to be brutal sometimes. You have to say, no, this doesn't work.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you need a bit of time to step back and you come back and say, it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Or this works better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Bunhan was for me the most in every way, because I'd lived with that story for quite some time.
Mm.
And we had done this other project going back to Stew, back and forth. And I knew the landscape inside out. So I chose a lot of the landscape. Most of my films, I chose the landscape.
Okay,
anyway, I don't have a production. I don't have a
production designer.
What's the one?
PM, production manager.
Location manager. I don't have my own location.
Good.
I think also because the characters, the assassin is based on someone I know, or two people I know. The school teacher is based on somebody I know.
Yeah.
The kickboxer is also partly based on people I know. And it's funny actually, Nanito, he says, you know, then I think it's, in the beginning it was supposed to be about the kickboxer. But more and more it was really about Ilham. And so, you know why then? I said, no. Because really that's who you are.
Yeah.
You're closer to that. And I realize how true that is, simply because, you know, and of all the guys, I love Ilham most, I think, because Ilham is the most that has integrity in a way that actually whatever he is, he's not a good person.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not a good person, but he is who he is.
Mm.
And I think he stands up for what he is and who he is, bad or wrong. Whereas, and to me, when I get questioned this thing, and so everything, the thing that I wanted the idea, that's why I exiled the women.
Mm. Yeah.
You hear them, but you don't see them.
Exactly.
Right? It's done on purpose.
Yeah.
Because I wanted the crocodile woman to stand up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my thing about the crocodile was more to celebrate in a certain way, and I can say this. You know, sometimes in the past it's very difficult to know what you can say, what you cannot say, because it's a part of us, it's a part of Malay culture that we've tried to deny, which is the animist aspect. Right?
Mm.
Right? And today you can easily be shot down for that.
Yeah.
And it is part of our dongeng. It is part of our folklore.
Yeah.
It is part of our folklore. And this was told to me. We did this whole thing with the Mak Yong. She said, apa jadi dengan dia? Orang kata dia, lepas tu dia jadi buaya. Tengah-tengah performance, dia jadi buaya. And then I thought, brilliant, that's what it is, right?
Yeah.
So I used that. So for me, everything that I wanted to do, in that, including the choice of time, because the lighting was softer, that's why I went into the monsoon.
Yeah.
Everything that I wanted to do, Every bit
Jadi.
Is there.
Mm.
Yeah, none of the skies were CGI, because I wanted that kind of thing.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. So you know, so therefore it is fulfilling in that sense, because the characterization, everything about it, I knew it to my bones.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you think trust is important in the creative process? I think we discussed this yesterday. When you're working with your DOP, your production design, do you think, are you the kind of director who has a clear vision, or are you open to, like, you know, collaborating ideas, or it's, you know, no, this is my vision, and you, you know?
It's funny, actually. I think that's a very important question. I think trust is very important because of that. Because if you're going to allow people, and I do, I like to think I do, allow a lot of room for people who work with me. Because at the end of the day, Charmaine, you know, if I can do it myself, I'm trying to, why the do I need you, right?
You
know, so I might as well do it myself, right?
Yeah.
So it's, I have, the only love-hate relationship I have with filming is the fact that, actually, there's too many people you have to work with.
Okay, that's one of our questions.
What do you dislike about filmmaking?
And that's what I realized. It goes back to literature. It goes back to those things because I think why I love... I used to love being in the dark room. I used to love being in the dark room. And I realized because I actually like being alone. And so, you know, when you are... And I realize I get carried away. That's why Nandita has to put a whip on me because
Nandita
is
the producer, okay? Yeah. Nandita is producer and lifelong friend, okay? Please, yes.
Because when I write, it's so easy to get lost in your own head.
Yeah.
And it becomes like a drug, you know? So, I mean, it becomes sadap. You know?
Sadap!
So you really have to get out of it. You really have to unsadap it. It's really terrible. And so, and that's why I also write late at night.
Yeah.
And so once I've got my cigarette and I've got my choice of liquids, and then it's like,
let's go.
So trust becomes really, really important because, I mean, with Tong, for example, the DP, it had to work, I had to do it, it had to happen very fast. Okay. And it's not easy because Thai people have a very different culture from you.
Okay.
Yeah? They're very different from us. And also then there was the language, but you can't just immediately go, hey, you know? You can't. Because Tong is quite a complex personality, but it's also... At the end, when you know him, very simple.
Yeah.
And as I got to know him, he would say, so I'll give an example. He would say to me, why don't we do this? And I'm wondering, okay. And then I would, of course, your initial question, why? I want it like this.
Yeah.
I said, can you tell me why, Tong? And he said, because da 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 da. And then I realized, actually, the process of thinking is different.
Yeah.
Maybe different.
Okay.
But the end result's the same.
Okay.
Because of that thought process.
Yeah.
Right? So you trusted him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So trust, trust has to be built.
Yeah, correct.
Trust is not, it has to be earned, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And so, I mean, at the end of the day, I also say to myself, but why should the actor trust me? Right? Why should the actor trust me? So you have to earn that trust.
True.
And you have to work really hard at it.
Yes.
He's not just because you're a director, you know, I want you to do this. No, it's not that. Because that's not necessarily doesn't guarantee. It's a creative process.
Yeah.
The word is process. So it doesn't guarantee
a
great performance.
Yeah.
Right? He may even be willing to say, I'm going to do a great performance for him. But it's not about that. It's about the process.
The process
itself. And I think for me, I mean, yes, Nani, I mean, you're right. I mean, the process of trust is extreme. But also, I think when you begin to understand the same thing, because look, we're very different people.
Everybody.
Yeah, we're different. But you know, some things you can add, some things you can't. Some things people out here and I'm here.
Yeah.
But how do you bring that gap?
And
how do you close that gap? Sometimes you can't, but you must allow for something else to happen.
Yeah.
But so long as you go through something during the hustle and you understand each other and you have to be prepared to know, either you say, no, I'm not working with this person, or you say, no, but that's legitimate.
Yeah.
That's legitimate. In the beginning, when you're trying out or when you're asking.
Yeah.
But you know, I think it's important because I don't know how to work any other way because I think, like I said, I don't like to dictate.
Yeah.
I don't like to say this. I know what I want.
Mm-hmm.
I can't ultimately say, no, I prefer like that.
Yeah.
But you may not be getting the best out of people, actually.
Yeah.
Right? I have that relationship with myself. I like doing shoot boards. My own. Okay. Not because for me, but mainly because when you sit in a meeting pre-production, they need to know. A lot of people don't believe in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for me, I believe in it because I think we all can be on the same page.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what happens is things can change.
Yeah.
And things can change. But if you have a plan, you have a shootboard, you have a plan, it's easier for you to deal with the change than if you have no plan.
My God, how long does the process take before you get on set?
I don't know, 3 months? Three months. But on my own first, maybe 2 months before that already.
Two, five?
So in between writing and all that.
Creative team, about 3 months, you go with them.
Two or three, depending on what we can afford. Two or three.
Well, understood.
But with my own, it can be anything from 2 months to 3 months, whatever time in between I draw. My point is, I think that, so when I talk about that framing, it's about trust with myself. Because when I draw everything neat, when I draw, you know, sometimes when you draw and you have a shoot board, you try to follow it.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the butterflies and the insects that people used to catch and they pin it.
Yeah.
You kill it. Because when you try to pin something down,
you kill it.
You don't give it room to breathe. That's why even from the drawings, I need to feel room. I need to feel the action. I need to feel the breathing. Because if it's just like that, I get scared. It's just going to kill me. It's funny when we first approached Pancha to edit with us. And I, first time Lanita introduced, she likes what he does.
So
introduced me and I said, so then this Pancha, sit down. And Pancha sat down and went, but then, saya mau beritahu dengan kamu ya, I don't edit. The universe edit for me. So I just looked and I just looked at Anita, but I just went, okay, how do I deal with this? No, I want you to f***ing edit.
The universe.
Like,
what's
going?
Okay. Then this has been so nice. I really want to. Can we get him for another episode?
Banyak lagi we didn't cross.
But
we got a lot.
Thank you so much.
But you know what? Thank you very much.
What should we know?
No, because I think that if we do either the next one like this,
please.
Or we could do something else.
Yeah.
No, about film, about this, but your experiences, my. So we talk about films. As a
group.
Thing, as a group. Your experience, my experience. So, I think that becomes, we can give it a name, whatever, but it's about, in a way, instead of giving lectures about filmmaking or whatever, but it's just talking about your experience in film, your experience, and different my experience from different yeah. perspective. And particularly because I think we're, in a way, different area of work, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then also different area of work, because you work with Yasmin. How does Yasmin work?
Yeah.
I work differently, you work differently.
Yeah, you handle everything on your own.
But I think perhaps it's also important to me, we look at what does it mean, and I think this is very true, what does it mean to be a woman to work in this industry? Behind the scenes, not just necessarily in front of the scene, in front of the camera. But what does it mean to be a woman? Because at that session, there was Nadia there.
Yeah.
And I realized actually, I can't remember when there was... hers is her first feature, kan?
Yes.
When there was a feature length film where there was a woman who was a writer except for Suryati in her horror film. I don't remember, and of course Shumi way before. I started with Shumi actually when I was really young.
There's like a void.
Yeah, I mean there's Jenny
Irma, Ame. Irma Fatimbon, her last film?
I'm not Embun. Yes, because Perempuan Melayu Untuk Akhir was before, no?
You should speak. You're right. I never realised. Nandita just got back from Locarno where we pitched our story. And I think partly we got in, she said, was because the people on the panel and everything for us to pitch, because the main character is a woman. It was a thing. I've been working with these Indonesians for a long time.
Yeah.
But anyway, their theme this year was women. And
this is in Locarno.
And apparently it's a EU, it will be an EU push and drive, if not Locarno alone, is to make sure by a certain date that more, about 50% of women are in the industry. 50%, if not more, will be directors. More and more directors. Maybe you can, I mean, I take it very seriously. Form some kind of group or whatever you want to call it, community, and have things on the agenda.
Right.
And sometimes it's hard to have 200 people, but you start small. And then you start building it and then find ways to build that as a building block. Because I think, Charmaine, Nani, I think now's the time to do it because I think it's very important. Because after me, Namron and Bronze Generation, who is there? And I think it's important that it's not the same cycle of people that do the same thing over and over again. And the only way, I believe, is you need to start, and I think it can be done, you reach out to the region first, you form on your own, you start, there's people like Matty Do in Laos, there are people that I know in Philippines, Indonesia, Andini, right? Andini. Who are your age, who are your generation, who are, and you can hold hands and reach out to each other and form some kind of network. Because you know what, if we don't, and I mean this in two fronts, not just from the front of filmmakers, but from the front of corporate culture. Because we cannot allow corporate culture and corporate culture alone to overtake film culture. Because we'll get nowhere. And at the moment, I can see that they don't understand this. They don't understand that whilst money is important, so is culture. That you must allow for film to happen, and it's not about the money. They don't understand this. It's hard for them to understand this. It's hard to get around their heads with this. Do you know the only country that funds filmmakers?
Kita.
In Singapore.
Singapore.
Yeah.
No other country in this region fund filmmakers. And yet, we allow all these other people in the wrong place, in the right place, wrong people, to make decisions and do things, you know. And I think it's, we must wrest control. We must take control of this. And the only way is, is if you build enough, and you build enough critical mass. But the critical mass must happen. It's not just about moving. Movement is great, but work.
Constant.
Whether it's short films, whether it's any kind of work that can go out there, that links everyone together, and that's the only way they will take you seriously. I always felt when I was living in London, I was outside looking in, and then when I came home, I felt outside looking in. And then at some point, I thought, actually, I'm just as Malay as you. But I can tell you now, I stop and ask, you ask any Malay, define to me a Malay. I can tell you now, they'll all be Oja.
And isn't that beautiful?
Yes. To me, though.
Thanks, Dan.
Sorry, I talk so much.
Nah, it's good.
Thank you so much for coming and lepaking with us
and having this
ideas. I was taking notes the whole time.
The ideas.
Hopefully we ignite something within us and within everybody else as well.
Sit down first.
So yes, that was our second episode of Lepak Seni with Dane Said. Thank you so much.
Yes.
We'd like to say thank you to Zoloi, motion scientist, Atas Bijan for our mics, Sufian Abbas, who's our BTS photographer, and also Steven Sinaya, who handles all of our website tech stuff.
Miss you, Stevie.
Yeah, and also our producers.
Thank you.
So if you want any more information or if you want any like suggestions for who we should talk to or questions, you can go to lepakseni.com.
Yes.
it's going to come out here.
And all our social media. So if you have any questions for, mana tahu you have questions for Dan, nak tahu lebih lanjut, nak macam, eh, story Dan tadi macam tak habis lah, saya nak tahu.
Tanya lagi.
Tanya saya, insyaAllah saya tanya Dan. Saya WhatsApp Dan. Dan, cerita hari tu macam mana eh? So kita tanya balik.
Yes.
Tapi apapun, terima kasih sangat kerana menonton. Terima kasih Dan Syed kerana sudi bersama kita. Dan ya, insyaAllah kita dapat dia balik untuk second episode.
Terima kasih Nani, terima kasih Syamin for inviting me.
Terima kasih.
Really lovely actually.
Thank you so much.
It's a privilege. Yeah, thank you.